I am fully endorsing Jeff Merrick, the idea of getting all 30 owners. And by 30, let's even let Greg Jameson 30? In the room. Yeah, why not? Let's
He's not an owner yet. No, you know what it'll be? It'll be Gary. It'll be Gary. It'll be Gary Bettman in like a novelty mustache and big nose. That's
Hello.
What happened to me as the owner of the Phoenix Coyotes.
It's I'm me, not Gary Bettman.
No, no, no. I'm a big fan of getting all these cats in a room and then letting as many players as want to attend to go in the room and just have a real constructive chat, because I think, Jeff, America, that this will be the way we end the lockout. There's nothing, no bad vibes or bad juju could come from eliminating Donald Fehr from the process and allowing a bunch of knuckleheads to take their fate in their own hands without any kind of, I don't know, legal representation or guidance or any of that stuff.
Yeah, I don't think the players are going to go for this one. I know if I was a player, I certainly wouldn't go for it. But it's right, to me, Wish, it's right out of the playbook of 204, 205 with the late grandfatherly Harley Hotchkiss putting his arm around Trevor Linden. Trevor, let's go for a walk. Let me tell you things from our point of view. Let's talk about the game and what's good for the game and getting the game back on the ice. This is, of course, after months and hours, weeks of being pounded down by meeting after meeting after frustrating meeting. And eventually the executive committee just said, just get this done. We're exhausted. Poor Trevor Linden, aged about 5 years in that 1 year that he was president of the PA. Isn't it kind of right out of that playbook? Like, eliminate everyone and get the owners to talk to the players directly. I mean, when you look at what the NHL has done from a tactic point of view this time around, isn't everything from the 04-05 playbook? You know, maintaining that the Players Association executive director is not surrendering the appropriate information to their constituents. The lockout tactic as one, the taking the 24% and then saying, okay, what's next? Refusing to budge and then eliminating Gary Bettman and Donald Fehr from the proceedings altogether in order to get the owners talking directly to the players. This is all 04-05. This is right out of the last lockout playbook.
It is, and it's divide and conquer. I mean, you know, like I wrote about on Puck Daddy today, they've now tried to do this in several different ways. They've been trying to get the message across that Donald Fehr is not communicating the truth to the players as far as what the offers have actually been.
Players are in the room, by the way.
Right, exactly. They did the end around where they tried to get the GMs a 48-hour window to talk to the players and so on and so forth. I mean, it's straight out of that playbook. But you know what, dude? Like, I'm of two minds here. Let's say, for example, that I'm not a complete guy in the corner of the players. And I am in many ways. So let's just play devil's advocate for a second.
All right.
What if Fehr is the guy holding this whole thing up? What if there is an ulterior motive, a different agenda, a guy who doesn't want to negotiate, a guy who's not offering clarity on certain aspects of the players' offers in order to allow the NHL to negotiate off of them, a guy who's being an obstructionist, a guy who takes 25 minutes to get a glass of water? What if, like, all that stuff is accurate? He's the guy holding it up, and maybe you take him out of the equation and we're playing hockey again.
It doesn't matter, because he's the only guy that can do a deal. Like, Chris Campoli can't sit down with Ted Leonsis and hammer out a CBA. Like, unlike last time where Trevor Linden had the authority to do that and had the authority to get rid of Bob Goodenow and bring in Ted Saskin and various agents
which is
CBA.
And which is why we don't have a president anymore in the NHLPA.
Correct. Yeah. So it, regardless of whether that may be true or not, it doesn't matter, because there's one person that can do the CBA, and that's Donald Fehr. And so far, overwhelmingly, he has the support of his constituents, to the point where if I'm a player, I'm saying to myself, hold on a second. Gary wants to withdraw from the meetings. We have these guys right where we want them. Like, if you're a player, aren't you kind of feeling a little bit chuffed right now? Like, we've got these guys. Finally, you know, they are at their wits' end. This is exactly where we want the NHL, because now they're starting to get nervous. And
well,
we haven't seen the NHL start to get nervous yet.
Well, that's an interesting view, because you can look at it one of two ways. Either the NHL is starting to get rattled here, and you know, they've made a proposal, they've gone to mediation, now they go ahead and suggest this thing with the meeting without Fehr or Bettman there. You could say they're getting rattled, you could say they're getting frustrated, but to what end? to the end of making a deal, taking a deal that's on the table right now and just being done with this thing, or being close to canceling the season.
Shutting it all down. Yeah. And that's the gamble. But you know what is interesting when you look at the symmetry of all of this? What does the NHL always do when there's a bad news day? They come up with a sunny story. Like, do you remember when they canceled the Winter Classic? That was done at, what, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Eastern? And what happened by 5 o'clock? They came off their provision to make whole. It was no longer part of the players' agenda, and now the owners were going to, quote-unquote, fork over the transitional money or the make-whole money. Right? Like, whenever there's – and then you know, the mediation sessions go south and nothing happens after a couple of days. And for about an hour, you have the, oh, mediation is done, woe is me story. And then the NHL comes out with this new idea for the main principles of negotiation to remove themselves from the proceedings. They've done a really smart job of not letting bad news stories hang in the media air for too long.
I love that concept, by the way. I love the idea of, like, well, we were really close to a deal, but then the NHL demanded that we get rid of arbitration. And then 5 minutes later, the NHL puts out a release that says, puppies for everyone! Everybody gets a puppy! Who wants a puppy?
Lollipops? You like lollipops? I got a lollipop right over here. Come on! Red, purple, whatever. Green, yellow, sure.
Yeah, we were going to have a deal, but then the NHL demanded that free agency get pushed all the way to 35 years old. Who would like to see an ice girl topless? We have ice girls. They've got nothing else to do. Perhaps you'd like to see them with sans a top. Huh?
But it's what they've done. It's like you're running what they're holding back for the next bad news story, because they know this is a losing. Like, last lockout, they didn't have to do any of this. The NHL didn't have to come up with the shiny, happy people story. There was no, you know, there was no free Prozac for everybody on bad news days, because overwhelmingly they had the support of the fans. They had the support in a lot of corners as well of the media. So they didn't have to do the sunny side of the mountain. They could just be the shady side of the mountain, and that was fine.
Right.
But this time around, since overwhelmingly everyone's lined up against them, whenever there's bad news, wait for it, folks. Take a deep breath, and by the time you exhale, there'll be a good news or a positive news story or a ray of hope coming from the National Hockey League.
God willing. God willing.
You know, they did it, right, with this one. Oh, yeah, they're going to try to recuse themselves from the meetings. If you're a player, okay, and I say this with all due respect to the 750 members of the National Hockey League Players Association, if you're a player, do you want to go into a meeting, a players/owners-only meeting? Like, these guys play hockey. A lot of these guys dropped out of high school or maybe only had 1 year of college under their belts. I know that if I'm a player, I don't want to go into that fight with Craig Leopold, Ted Leonsis,
oh, yeah?
Jeremy Jacobs, Murray.
Well, you know,
Edwards,
you say that, Merrick, but let's see Ted Leonsis take a slap shot, right? Yeah, we got skills too.
See Craig Leopold quarterback a power play.
Yeah, he can't even do it, can he?
No,
probably
he's probably
terrible in the room.
Don't even know if you're a right-hand shot or left-hand shot. Look, grocery stick, just sit there on the bench and separate the forwards from the D. That's what your job is.
You know what the real problem with doing my stereotypical player impression is? We try to keep the profanities off the show because we don't want to get the explicit tag on iTunes.
It's hard, though. It's hard.
And do the proper player impression. You have to use the F word with extreme frequency in order to really get it right. You know what I mean?
At the gym that I work out at now, it's all hockey players, and it's a bunch of locked out guys and a bunch of guys that play in the OHL as well. And it is the saltiest conversation.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Like, honestly, it's like, oh, and it's enough to make me blush. And you know how far I like to go when the mics are cold. It's remarkable. I don't know how they got. Well, like, that's the one thing when we always hear about, like, you know, mics getting too close to the ice. That's one of the main concerns. It's like, do you really want to know how these guys talk? Like, do you want
it's
to know
so
how these
strange
because,
like, I'll interview a player in the room after a game, right? And, you know, we'll have our little perfunctory discussion. Oh, you know, 110% played well. Their team, blah blah blah. Oh, can't wait for it's an 82 game season, you know, and blah blah. And then, you know, occasionally I'll run across these guys in everyday life or at a pub somewhere, and it's like, I realize they actually do speak my language. It's a beautiful thing. Like, why can't we speak this way all the time, boys?
I know. It'd be a wonderful thing. Well, wasn't there a proposal from HBO during the last lockout that HBO handled some – I mean, it turned into sort of 24/7 – that HBO handles some games, and that's what they do. They mic up the players?
Yeah. That's what I was hoping. It's one of the planks in the Wyszynski platform has always been games on HBO, where not only do you have every player mic'd up and get to hear everything that happens on the ice 24/7 style, but the announcers, the booth, gets to be just as candid, and so that way you can get Dennis Leary in the booth. You can get like all your hockey nuts from Hollywood can pop in and play the Dennis Miller role in a three-man hockey booth. Wouldn't that be great?
Wow. Yeah, I'm trying to think of who would be the best. Who's the like Doug Stanhope, for example, in the booth would be fantastic if he could just let him work blue. But the thing is about that, like, I don't think you should necessarily hold players responsible for what they say on the ice as long as you're going into it knowing that this is going to be some pretty salty talk. Like, this is going to be some pretty salty language.
We've had that discussion vis-a-vis the if you could play stuff. I mean, like, I consider everything inside the rink to be Thunderdome. Mm-hmm. You know, anything
different
said,
world,
anything
man.
Goes, anything you do just to get the other guy off his game. But I mean, listen, we're in a society now where there are different standards than there were back in the day, and I accept that. I accept the fact that you can't just say anything to get under another player's skin, because sometimes those words can be hurtful, and sometimes if those words can get out in public, you get in trouble. But luckily, the National Hockey League can't prove that you actually said it by reading your lips, even though you may have formed the F and then the A and then perhaps a G.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't read lips.
Speaking of announcers, this is from Seth Warshaw, writes into the podcast. About a month ago, you guys brought up Barry Melrose's laughable coverage of a KHL game and how it may have been because of his relationships with NHL bigwigs. I'm currently watching a rerun of the Avangarde Barris Astana game on MSG, and mm-hmm. John Giannone and Joe Micheletti's coverage of the game is the exact opposite of Melrose's. They're treating it like a playoff game seven, and their knowledge of the players is not only a testament to their skill, but also to James Dolan and his clear distaste for the lockout. As a Rangers fan, this is the first time I've ever not wanted to boo Dolan. So the theory is, since the game's on MSG, and James Dolan is diametrically opposed to Gary Bettman at every turn, they're treating the KHL as something serious. It goes on ESPN. Where you have two guys that are kind of, you know, league boys in Steve Beavy and Barry Melrose, and they treat it as a joke. I love this theory, by the way. I completely want to believe this theory, by the way.
Yeah, I'd be curious at this owner's only. Oh, first of all, how do you think the NHL would react if the players came back with, okay, we'll do the players and owners only meeting as long as we do it in a public forum. As long as we do it publicly with TV cameras there.
They would never do that.
All right.
No.
What you got?
You know why? You know, I'll tell you exactly why. The answer would be, we believe we're so far along in this process that it's not time for grandstanding. I can't be in the room to grandstand. Donald Fear can't be in the room to grandstand. So why should I allow the players to grandstand?
I thought you were going to say we did not negotiate in public, even though we, you know, we post our proposals on our website.
Time
but
is
really,
running too short to have honestly, stump speeches.
Honestly wish, like, just one meeting. Like, wouldn't you like to have that peek behind the curtain? Mm. Hey, and listen,
No, I was going to say, I wanted the federal arbitrator to come, or mediator to come out and just be like, here's the deal. Or somebody to leak. Wouldn't it be great just to get a leak from those guys? Just be like, you know what, honestly, the players, they got a point. They got a little bit of a point. Yeah, wouldn't it be great to just hear a neutral party evaluate this thing and hear that from somebody? Whether it's the players or the owners, just somebody neutral to come down and say it. Or have them come out and be like, these guys are out of their effing minds. And they're never going to get a deal done. They don't care.
These guys are crazy. I've never seen this.
Yeah, I've never seen this before. Yeah, like I joked on Twitter yesterday.
I've mediated with like the automobile industry, the aviators, and everything. These guys are messed.
The mediators got done with the meeting with the NHL, the NHLPA, and immediately requested a transfer to Gaza. That's exactly what happened after that trip, that meeting. All right, listen, we got a lot to get to today. We got a lot to get to today. Question of the day, by the way. It's an interesting question today. As you know, we had an unfortunate death in the hockey family, the sports family, yesterday. Yeah. David Courtney, long time, 22 years time, Los Angeles Kings PA announcer at games, died at 54 years old, way too early. A really beloved figure in LA sports. Did Clippers games, did Angels games, voice of the Kings. Every remembrance and message that was dropped on our blog and other blogs with regard to him passing, just glowing, just really glowing, and definitely helped make the game night experience more memorable for Kings fans.
Can I ask you something?
Question to you. Yes, please.
I don't before you get to the QOD, and I don't think this is morbid. I think it's a legitimate question. Do you think he should be buried with a ring?
Now, okay. This becomes an issue of timing, doesn't it? Like, have the rings already been forged? Or do they still need to be forged? You see?
I don't know the answer to
the question.
That.
Because
I'd assume that they'd be ready by now.
If they're ready by now, then yeah, I don't think there's anything morbid about that. But if they aren't ready, well, then it becomes kind of an uncomfortable situation, doesn't it, Merrick? Well, either you're waiting to close the deal until they're ready, or you're kind of...
But if they're ready, do you think David Courtney should be buried with a ring?
Totally.
All right. Because I do too.
On the serious tip, Helene Elliott said what I was thinking, but I wasn't going to say it, because I think this is like... This is tough when you're trying to, you know, straddle the fence a little bit and try to be fair in this thing, because this is a really damning statement, but it's true. This guy missed the banner raising because of the lockout. I mean, this guy's dead now. This guy's been probably – I'm not even probably. This guy's been living his whole life doing this job every single night in the National Hockey League regular season, waiting for the chance to do a banner raising. And he didn't get the chance now because of the lockout. Uh-huh. It's terrible.
Yep. Yep. Anyway. Came close in 1993. And man, he must have been feeling great after game one in that Stanley Cup final. Of course, it all came undone, against the Montreal Canadiens, but he'd wanted that and waited for that his entire life. At only 54. And it was just complaining about a little bit of shortness of breath. Took him into the hospital. Seemed to be fine. They're just going to keep him in overnight just as a precaution and gone the next morning. 54.
You just know.
I'm a freak about it, and I understand that. But man, guys, gals, keep yourself in shape. Honestly, do yourself the favor. Just try whatever you can to keep yourself in shape.
The real issue for me now is that. Listen, I know, and I appreciate that you try to keep people healthy, but I can't right now think of anything but some asshole digging into the ground. Taking the ring and putting it on eBay.
Really? That's like the oldest crime known to man. Like, I worked at a cemetery for 4 years, oh, yeah, and no. I never experienced that. Like, man, you gotta be like...
You never experienced one grave robbing in your time working in a cemetery?
At Park Lawn? Really? No, not one grave robbing. No. Although, one time, I remember I was walking through the graveyard, and, you know, before they used to have vaults, they used to just throw the coffin in the ground and
Can you start every story like that, by the way? Can you start every story like that?
Just walking through the graveyard?
I was walking through the graveyard once.
And what happens is, like, the wood on the old coffins will just, you know, disintegrate after a while. And so you just sort of, it turns into a big sinkhole. And I remember this guy must have been buried. It must have been like a Friday burial. Oh, by the way, folks, here's a tip. Don't get buried on Fridays because the guys want to leave early and they'll do a really sloppy job. More on that in another podcast. And I remember I fell into a sinkhole and right beside me was this guy's Italian loafers. And the guy that I was working with was like, oh, dude, those are great loafers. You got to take them. And I'm like, that's the oldest crime known to desecration of a burial site. It's like the oldest crime known to man. You think someone would dig that up and put it on eBay? Wish.
Oh, see now all I could think of is now all I could
see
think
now
of is
you're
working
morbid.
In a you're working in a graveyard, and those zombies knowing how big that brain is. So much junior hockey knowledge in that big juicy brain.
Oh yeah,
yours.
Junior hockey knowledge tastes good.
A Thanksgiving meal of cerebral cortex, sir.
The zombie code a lot better than I do, or how zombies supposed to behave, what they're supposed to
be. Oh, an expert on the subject, for sure, yeah.
Oh, okay. When it comes to brains, does knowledge of junior hockey taste better than other types of knowledge? Like, does knowledge have a flavor? yes. in a person's brain.
Yes, it does.
It does, eh? What's yep. the tastiest?
Well, if you're
what does junior hockey rank?
If you're a fan of like Western culture, or if yep. you're from Texas, your brain tastes like leather. That's why most zombies, if you watch the films, a lot of zombies will attack co-eds because they're usually a fan of pop music, hence their brain tastes like bubblegum. It's a fact.
I love when you just make shit up on the fly.
What to make shit up? I'm an expert. Listen, we have to start the show. Let's start the show proper, shall we?
All right.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Everything else just sounds like...
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
It's a brand new podcast.
Debate hockey.
I don't touch salmon at all.
Oh, that's refreshing.
Pop culture.
I can dig it. Can you dig it?
And more hockey.
I fought a Rottweiler and you got blocked by Ryan Whitney.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start the show proper, shall we? Holy shitballs, what a show we have for you today. We might go overtime today. Warning to Josh behind the glass. This might be overtime today.
Really?
We've got Down Goes Brown coming up in a few, talking about the legacy of Brian Burke. What was it, fourth anniversary of Burke or fifth?
Yesterday.
What is it?
Yeah,
was
fourth it? Anniversary.
Fourth
yesterday.
Anniversary.
When truculence came to town.
That's right. Question of the day, by the way. I don't know if I actually got it out before we got on our weird grave robbing tangent. Your favorite and then least favorite aspect of the in-arena entertainment experience, be it the PA announcer. I know everybody loves a PA announcer. Be it the music, the lights, the intro, whatever, what have you. All of that stuff. What is your favorite aspect of your team's in-arena experience? What is your least favorite aspect of your team's in-arena experience? PuckDaddyBlog at Yahoo.com, at Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick on the old Twitter, hashtag at MVSW, and we go from there.
You know, for me, it's the PA announcing in Toronto of Andy Frost. And you know why? And I've got to know Andy through working at Corus Entertainment years ago. But Andy was always the coolest, and I think he was handpicked, I think, by Ken Dryden to take over from Paul Morris. I just love the fact that in Toronto, the guy that is the in-house announcer for the Toronto Maple Leafs is the same guy that does one of the coolest shows you've ever heard on radio, Psychedelic Sunday, which is all psychedelic music on Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon. To me, that represents one of the coolest things in the game right now, hands down. Andy Frost, PA announcer. It's the best.
Big fan of Wes Johnson, the PA announcer here in Washington. He's a friend of mine. I put him over. Love what he does.
Okay.
The other thing I loved was during the Stanley Cup playoffs last year, specifically the Stanley Cup final, the New Jersey Devils intro that they were doing with Nine Inch Nails music. And just instrumental and very industrial and very scary and awesome was one of my favorite things that they did as well. Least favorite thing, I don't know. I the people, well, this is an in-arena.
Cut Nine Joe. That's the one.
Yeah, this isn't in-arena entertainment necessarily. This is more on the fans. But goddamn if I ever see the wave at a hockey game again. And it's not Europe.
I hate it.
Europe gets a pass. But they did it. They started to try one in Atlantic City. And I'm like, oh, that's really good. Hurricane
a
relief,
wave?
And we're doing the wave.
Hey, listen, anyway. I don't want to encourage violence, but if you ever are sitting next to someone who tries to start a wave, punch them. Like, as hard as you can. Like, not a headshot, but like a good shot in the solar plexus. That really drops, takes the breath away. Anyone tries to start the wave around you, Merrick says, take a swing at him.
Joining us now on the line, a man who is no stranger to the listeners of this very podcast. He has a book called... Everybody take a deep breath. The Best of Down Goes Brown, Greatest Hits and Brand New Classics to Be from Hockey's Most Hilarious Blog, in which he also gets literary hand jobs from Bob McKenzie and James Duffy as well. That's always a good thing.
Oh.
He is Sean McIndoe, and he joins us here on the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. Hello, Sean.
Hey, guys.
What's going on, Sean?
How is superstar authordom treating you, sir?
It's fantastic, man. I tell you, the mobs of crowds that follow me everywhere I go. It's fantastic.
How do you know, where do you keep all the vagina? Do you use buckets or like a dumpster?
Yeah,
what do you do?
I let it all pile up in my driveway, and I just shovel my way through my car every morning.
Panties, hotel room keys, women just throwing themselves at you everywhere you go on these yep. on these book tours, Sean.
You know, and that's just when they hear I'm a blogger.
You know,
when they hear that I also have a $12 book on Amazon, then it's just it's game over.
Oh, I know.
Plug away.
I know. They're dropping.
Hey, so go ahead, Merrick.
I was just going to say, before we get to the audit of Brian Burke's first 4 years as a general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, your thoughts on our question of the day about game ops, Sean. Your favorite and least favorite thing about game ops at your rank, which in your case, even though you live in Ottawa, would be the ACC for the Toronto Maple Leafs. What's your favorite and most disliked element of game ops in Toronto?
Well, I mean, that's a tough one, because my least favorite is that Toronto is one of those arenas where it's just constant. Like, there's not half a second to think without somebody screeching into a microphone with, you know, some terrible trivia question or sponsor message or whatever it is. The only stuff that I actually like there, and I don't know if they do it anymore because I've only been to a couple games in the past few years, but I was there once and they did this great video before the game. It was like one of these kind of pump-up videos where it was just showing all the players. And they just build it and build it, and then one of the very last shots is that famous shot of Wendell Clark coming out of the dressing room, and I swear that got a bigger cheer than anything that happened in the game, which was actually a little bit depressing, but it was still, it was still a really cool moment. And, everyone just explodes, and, everyone's just looking around, going, wow, that was great, And then it was, the team came out on the ice, and everyone was like, oh, right, these guys. And then we all remained completely silent for the next 60 minutes.
As far as video montages go, what the Maple Leafs do a great job of? Whenever Johnny Bauer is in the house, they have like a 2 minute, maybe a buck 30, like a 90 second interstitial of highlights of Johnny Bauer's career where he's like, stopping a puck with his face and then batting it out of the air with his goal stick. Maurice Richard cross-checking him in the face and Johnny Bauer punching him and making big saves and winning Stanley Cups. And then when that video, like, they whips the fans into a frenzy. When the video is over, they cut to a tight one shot of Johnny Bauer sitting there, and I'm telling you, as much as, Gilmore has his fans and Wendell Clark has his fans and Matt Sundin and Daryl Sittler and Dave Keon and go all the way back to Charlie Conacher and the Kid Line, no one gets a bigger ovation or that I've heard at the Air Canada Centre than Johnny Bauer. To me, he represents, cross-sectionally, whether you're 8 or you're 80, everybody loves Johnny Bauer.
Yeah, everybody loves him. And also, they're also cheering because he is still the best goaltender that the organization currently has. Like, he could strap his pads on and go down there and win the starter's job and be the best goalie Brian Burke has ever had.
Speaking of Brian Burke, Captain Transition, 4 years of Brian Burke in truculent hockey. If you were to assign, sir, a letter grade to those 4 years of Brian Burke as the general manager of the Leafs, what would it be?
I'm going to give him a D+.
A D plus. That seems harsh.
Is that
harsh.
Actual grade?
That seems harsh.
Do you ever actually get a D plus?
I'm
going D plus.
Yep, D plus. Now, why not a C minus, sir?
Well, because you could talk me into C minus, but to my mind, you look at where the team is now versus what he took over, and he was starting. You can't possibly take a job where the bar is set any lower. Both between. The fan expectations in Toronto are always high. Don't get me wrong. They're always usually unreasonably high. But you look at how bad the team was when he took it over, how frustrated the fans were, and how excited the fans were when he came in. At the time, it felt like it would almost be impossible for him to be a disappointment, because anything he did would, by definition, improve things, and then he'd get the credit for it, and everybody would be happy. And you fast forward ahead 4 years, to where we are now, where, if you're being generous, you might say that the Leafs have made small amounts of progress. And if you want to be a pessimist, you could even argue that they might even be even worse off than they were before. But, I don't think I can get them out of the D range just based on the results that we've seen.
What about what he's put in the pipeline? What about what are the players that he's drafted, players that are on the horizon? Stu Percy, the more I watch Steelheads games, this guy looks like he's going to be an NHLer when he fills out. The Morgan Riley story has been well told. Tyler Biggs has the NHL body, question about whether he can skate at the NHL level or not. But what about some of the kids that he's put in the pipeline, Sean?
I mean, the kids are good. The system is fairly good. I mean, when you look at these rankings that come out where they rank organizations by what they've got in the system, what they've got coming through, the Leafs tend to, they're usually middle of the pack. So he hasn't built a great system. He doesn't really have anyone in the system where you point to and say, that is a future superstar for sure. Maybe Morgan Riley, you'd probably want to see a little bit more there. But, yeah, I mean, I look at Riley as a blue chipper. I look at Jake Gardner, even though he's been in the NHL for a little while now, as a blue chipper. Some of the other guys are, there's potential there, but, you know, definitely not sure things. But I guess my argument would be it's been 4 years with no playoffs. It's been 4 years of bottom 10 finishes, and two of those years have been bottom 5 finishes. So you should have some good stuff in the pipeline. I mean, the fact that the Leafs have two blue chippers after 4 years, I mean, if you're finishing bottom 10 every year, you should have four by this point.
I certainly give them credit,
and when you look at what we thought the cupboard looked like when he took over, although some of those Ferguson picks have actually turned out better than we thought, yes, it's better. But it would be really hard for it not to be better when you're finishing last year after year after year.
Well, they have Tyler Seguin and Doug Hamilton, don't they?
I'm pretty sure.
Hey, you know, for better or for worse, and probably for worse, will that be the trade that he is forever judged by?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely it will. I mean, that was a trade. Even at the time, you knew this was going to be kind of the defining deal. And it's, in a sense, it's a tough one to judge him on because we're not going to know. We said at the time when the trade got made that we're not going to know for 10 years who won that trade. And we still don't know how the whole legacy of that is going to play out. I mean, I would say in defense of Brian Burke, he gets criticized for that deal all the time. There's a lot of GMs in the league that would love for their consensus worst trade to be one where they got a young superstar who's a top 10 scorer and still in his prime. I mean, that's not bad. If that's the worst you've ever done, that's not too bad. But the fact of it is, the reason that trade stings so much is because it's symbolic of the main mistake that Brian Burke made when he came to Toronto, which is that he came in, looked at the roster that he had, looked at the system that he had, and he said, you know what, we can do this faster. We don't need to do a rebuild. We don't need to be patient. We can do it right now. And you don't trade two future first-round picks, no matter how great a young talent you're getting. You don't trade those two picks if you're doing a patient rebuild. You trade those picks if you think you're a year or two away from contending for something right off the bat. And you look at that move, and you look at all sorts of other moves that Brian Burke made and didn't made. They all fall into that category of a guy who thought he was so much closer than he was.
I'm going to bring up an example.
I thought his greatest mistake was establishing a bunch of bullshit rules through which he could never sign a player or trade a player at a certain time during the year.
Yeah, well, I mean, all of that plays into it. I mean, that's the kind of thing where, as a fan, you tear your hair out because when you're in last place, you shouldn't be handcuffing yourself at all. So, I mean, that's definitely part of it. But again, that's the kind of thing you do when you're already a winner, when you already have a winning team. Then you can start telling everyone else how they should run their teams and start doing things differently. But when you're still stuck in last place, then you got to be firing every bullet you got available to you.
Well, and the thing about the trade freeze before the trade freeze, you know, the Christmas freeze before the Christmas freeze. I mean, the one thing that Brian Burke pretty much said as soon as he took over the job was, we need to get blue and white disease out of here. And so what's the first thing he did is made it as cushy as possible for the players that are on the roster. I want to go back to the Phil Kessel trade.
The Maple Leafs are the only team in the league where they have these delicate little flowers that can't handle the pressure of the trade deadline or that need extra Christmas vacation and can never be asked to waive their no-trade clause unless they bring it up first and all this nonsense. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I wrote at one point, if you're talking about blue and white disease, Brian, the call is coming from inside the house.
Let me go back to the Kessel trade because I know that that's a great line. I know that this is going to end up at the obvious place where we say, well, there's no way he could do that. What I could never understand about the Kessel trade is why they didn't protect the first round pick, i.e., okay, Pete, we're going to do this deal. But if that's a top five pick, it pushes to the next season. I can never understand why. And even if Peter Shirelli would have come back and said, no, we're not going to do that deal if you protect the pick, all Brian has to say, because let's not forget, the Boston Bruins already established their threshold with a David Krejci contract, and they weren't going to go 5.5 for Phil Kessel and put their salary structure out of whack. All Brian Burke had to say were these words, I will offer sheet him.
Yeah.
But he didn't do it because
exactly.
of what happened with
he
Kevin.
He had all the leverage, at least as far as not, he didn't have
all
the leverage as far as getting the player. That's why he had to give up more than the first, second, and third, because he wanted the player and he couldn't necessarily guarantee that the Bruins wouldn't swallow
it
hard.
It wouldn't match.
The offer,
it wouldn't match.
Keep him for a
they
year.
Couldn't. Because it would have screwed him up with Lucic. It would have screwed him up with Patrice Bergeron. It would have thrown Boston's entire salary structure out of whack. They couldn't do it, Sean.
Scenario would have been it would have done damage to a division rival. But no, in answer to your question why he didn't do that, I honestly think that a big part of it was that that's just not the kind of thing that Brian Burke would ask for. Brian Burke had already said he thought he had a team that was going to make the playoffs that year. So for him to hedge his bets by saying, hey, just in case it's a top five pick, I need a little bit of protection. I mean, I think that could have been a case where the ego gets in the way and the public persona and the, you know, puffed up chest and all of this stuff that he's so known for gets in the way of him just doing what would have been the right thing for the team.
Moving off Brian Burke, who I believe you've now awarded a D+ to, we've established this. Your thoughts on the 76th day of the National Hockey League lockout, sir? Where do you stand on this? Do you feel as though there is panic on the owner's side? And if so, is it indicative of panic towards a resolution or panic towards pressing the red, shiny, candy-like button to cancel the season?
That's a great question. I mean, I don't know. I don't sense that there is panic. Panic is the sort of reaction that normal human beings with functioning brains and hearts looking at this situation would feel if they were in the owner's case, where they're getting ready to torpedo a second season in 8 years for really for no reason. I mean, the first time around, it was bad enough to be the first team to, or the first league to ever lose a whole season, but at least there was a reason behind it. There was a big goal in play. Here, there's none of that. There's no reason other than pride and ego and greed. So, yeah, I mean, if we had actual real functional human beings running this, then I think there would be panic, but I don't necessarily sense that there is. I think you've got a hardcore group that doesn't want to make a deal at all unless it's total capitulation, unless it can be a total win, where they can wipe the slate clean from everyone who said that they blew it in 2004. And then I think you've probably got a whole bunch of other owners that either aren't comfortable with the direction the league is heading or might really adamantly not want to cancel anything, but from all that we can see, and we're not at the meetings and we're not on the phone calls, but from all we can see, they're happy to just sit back quietly and let Jeremy Jacobs and Gary Bettman and the other Hawks drive this bus. And, you know, I don't know why the, you know, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment wouldn't be storming out of these meetings and throwing chairs around the way things are going. But,
maybe they are, and we're just not hearing about it, but they should be. They're not, and I'll tell you exactly why. Because the Maple Leafs have their anniversary coming up, and they would like some shiny things like an outdoor game, a draft, an all-star game, and we know that the commissioner can be very vindictive and can hold grudges. And if you go against Gary Bettman's wishes and try to put together a cabal of 18 or 19 or 20 owners that can overwhelm the 8, which can actually ride the day, well, you know that the Maple Leafs aren't getting shiny toys. It's bizarre it's true.
That's true. That's because when you diss Gary Bettman, you only diss yourself. You know this.
But that's exactly why it is. I mean, it's such a bizarre. Like in other sports, the most powerful, rich teams, they control the day. Yep. They run the agenda. But we're the Rangers and we're the Maple Leafs.
Imagine Major League Baseball about to lose a whole season, and the New York Yankees are sitting quietly with their hands folded on the sidelines. Or, I mean, we know that when the NFL went through this, it was, apparently it was the New England Patriots, one of the, the biggest, most popular franchises that stepped in and said, hey, we gotta get a deal done here, guys. And, again, maybe stuff is happening behind the scenes, but if the Leafs are just worried about, you know, some all-star game or some, you know, whatever it is, it's just gonna, you know, it'll make money for them, but it's just gonna, more corporate ticket holders will get to go to the games. I mean, if I was them, I'd walk in, I'd say, okay, you know what? You guys are going to do this. We're not doing any revenue sharing payments this year. Take us to court. See how long, you know, and we know we're going to pay at the end, but go ahead and, find out. We'll go a few months without getting any nice big fat checks from your friends in Toronto and see if that gets anyone's attention. The fact is the Leafs are paying for half of this league and yet they don't really seem to get a say in the lockout that's shutting it down.
Hey Sean, you're one of the preeminent humor bloggers on the internet. What's it been like trying to be funny during an NHL lockout?
Yeah, it's been pretty rough. And the reason is that first of all, nothing is actually happening in the lockout. I was at a seminar where I was sitting next to a journalist, and they asked him to give a to describe what's been happening in the lockout, and he gave an answer that was 20 seconds long, and like that was it. He didn't miss anything. He didn't skip any important details. You could have summarized the last 2 months in 20 seconds. So that's bad enough, and from my perspective, the problem is that when something does move, like if the players come down from 53% to 51%, that doesn't suddenly open up a whole bunch of new 51% jokes that I can start making. You know, I'm still kind of making the same thing. So I'm just sitting around these days, like just hitting refresh on my newsfeed, going like, please, can somebody get arrested dressed up like a Teletubby or something like that, so I've got something else to talk about.
Hey, welcome to Grand Rapids. We have a Riley gentleman that would like to speak to you. You know, I wonder how much of this, you know, the idea of, you know, Donald and Gary excusing themselves in the next meeting, I wonder how much of it is just, you know, the preamble or the stalling to get to December 5th when the Board of Governors will be asked one question. Should we stay the course or should we change? Do you think right now the NHL is just sort of just stalling to make it look like there's something going on, like there's some communication, so they haven't shut anything down, knowing how much they got beaten up when they said let's take a two-week break and then had to backpedal on it? Do you think right now they're just try to make it look like there's some momentum and some conversation until we get to the BOG on the 5th?
Yeah, I think that that's quite possible. I mean, certainly the whole mediation thing at this point, now that we saw how it went, that feels like it was just a stalling tactic. Like it was something to put up there to the fans to say, see, we tried, and then, you know, nothing came of it, but we didn't waste a whole week. So, yeah, they may be stalling to get to that meeting. Although I don't really get why the Board of Governors meeting is so important, given that something like 25 out of the 30 members of the Board of Governors are the owners anyways. So, I mean, in theory, Gary Bettman's already in touch with these guys and already has a sense of where everybody's at. But I guess he must have something good or bad that he wants to put in front of him next week. And, yeah, I don't expect that we're going to see anything over the weekend or early next week until all of his 30 bosses tell him what to do.
All right, man. All right, listen. Okay, you wrote something today. What did you write today?
What did I write? I wrote about the Forbes article.
Ah, brilliant,
this is
brilliant.
The Forbes NHL evaluations that everyone is criticizing and talking about how badly they got it wrong. So I took a look at what the problem was and why they got it wrong.
And where can people, because as you know, it's almost Christmas time, and that means there must be stocking stuffers all over this great continent of ours. Where can people find your book to stuff their stocking with it?
You can find the book, certainly if you're in Canada, you can find it at any of the bookstores, the Chapters, and anywhere else. Most of them up here have got hockey displays, and you should be able to find it there. Down in the States, you can find it in many of the stores, although it might be a little tougher than Canada, but certainly you can find it on whether it's Amazon or Barnes & Noble, whatever your favorite online bookstore is. Just go do a search for Down Goes Brown, and you'll find it right there, and you can buy many copies, and they'll ship it right to your house.
Canada doesn't have books. You could stop with that now. It's
you jerk. Get out of here, dumb American.
All right. Thank you so much, Down Goes Brown, for gracing us again with your presence now that
Thank
you're a
you
big
guys.
Star. Thank you.
Yeah, I know he's a star now. Thanks, Sean. Thanks, bud. Yeah, you must have got more ass in a toilet seat when your book came out, eh, Wick?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, actually, it's funny you should say that because, after all, I wrote a bathroom book, so there was a lot of ass in toilet seats, but not necessarily coming my way.
Oh, well, alas.
A couple of the question of the days before we get to a Friday favorite. Tape Leg writes in, as I said in the Puck Daddy Essentials, I hate the quiet stoicism until the Avs get a lead. Have you noticed the dynamic of the modern fan? I don't know if this has always been the case for a hockey game, but we start off like a roller coaster at the apex of the track, and then broom, we go down really fast, and it's really, really loud, and the lights are going crazy. Like the first 6 minutes of the game are nuts. And then it's like Lullsville. It's like a lull, like a valley. You notice that?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, because every now and then, because games just end up just settling in. It happens all the time. And once or twice a season, you'll end up just watching that game on center ice, for example, where the game never settles. Like, honestly, that's when you talk about, you know, edge of your seat and all, it's a fantastic game. Because all games I think most games, 99% of games, have a natural rhythm to them. And yeah. stylistically, there's one team trying to do this, another team trying to do that. And eventually, it just settles into a rhythm. And the game becomes what the game is eventually going to be based on that rhythm. But every now and then, you get that freak. And that's one of the things I love as well. When the game never settles. When the, you know, one team is playing in 4-4 time signature and the other is playing in 7-8. And the game never settles into a very unique give-and-take type rhythm. Those are those special moments, and you get those every now. And, you know, lately, the past, what, 4 or 5 years, a lot of those games have been Pittsburgh-Philadelphia and Pittsburgh-Washington. Yeah, sure. Those are the games where you just like, man, there is no rhythm, and this is awesome.
This is awesome. It's my favorite wrestling chants from the new school.
Nah, my favorite is Where's My Pizza for Lil Guido in ECW. Those are the best. Where's my pizza?
And also, you effed up. We can't say the full word on this podcast.
I know.
Not all the time.
We have.
We'll I know. We totally have.
I know.
Nikki Schutz writes in, best, Console Energy Center has great beer selection. Worst, the weird text message trivia / polls.
Yeah, I'm done with polls.
Katarin writes in, worst thing about the United Center has to be the garbage house band they brought in last season. Isn't there a house band in Nashville, too? I've never gone to a Predators
game. I've seen house bands.
DJ Malone, the organ in St. Louis. Karen Douglas, I thought I was the only
that
one who
the
hated
best,
the wave.
Right? Hang on. That would be the best. Okay, yeah. Okay, good.
Karen Douglas writes in, I thought I was the only one who hated the wave at hockey games. Nope, you are
good
not.
You.
Rhiannon writes in, best is Lauren Hart, and least is probably a tie between the dancing Shawnee and the idiot Crosby sucks chance. Lauren Hart, by the way, I don't think I mentioned this when we talked about the Atlantic City game, sang the anthem in Atlantic City before the charity game, did not have Kate Smith backup.
Oh, sans Kate?
Yep.
No,
didn't have that wonderful moment of, from the mountains to the prairie.
Was it Bobby Orr or was it Phil Esposito that brought her flowers? Because remember there was that streak that the Flyers were on when they had Kate Smith saying they'd bring her out and the Flyers just like, they just couldn't lose. And so before the game, I think it was Bobby Orr skated to center ice, but she was about to start singing it and gave her a bouquet of flowers to get rid of the hex.
Bruce Matthews writes in one that I will plead ignorance to. I have not been to a St. Louis Blues home game either. So, I want to talk about this one before I get to the Friday favorite real quick. In St. Louis, there is the Ameren UE Power Play Dance. Do you know what this is?
No.
Okay. Occasionally, there will be a video before the game explaining how to do this quote-unquote dance, which is really thrusting your arms up and down like some sort of deranged NFL official signaling a successful field goal. I have never been more embarrassed to be a Blues fan than when sitting around out-of-town Red Wing or Blackhawk fans when this goes on. Hate is not a strong enough word. I will plead ignorance to the power play dance in St. Louis.
I don't know either. This is
hate, not a strong enough word to describe how he feels about this dance.
If this exists on YouTube, please someone tweet us.
I'll tweet out the link. He did give me a video for it. But anyway, all right, okay, join us now. Right. Oh, hold on. We got to get to the actual intro.
Jeez, do it right.
Sorry.
Come on.
It's Game Show Friday. Joining us now on the line, he is Chris. Is it Cober, sir?
It is, yes.
Not Cobber, Cober.
Cober, yes, hard O.
And did I see from our producer Josh's note that you were calling from the OC?
I am.
And what is your team of choice?
That would be the Anaheim Ducks.
Condolences.
Hey, Stanley Cup winners 2007.
Yeah, well, cool, the LA Kings Stanley Cup winners 2012. They got some catching up to do now.
I haven't seen a ring. I haven't seen a banner.
Jesus Christ. Well, they went up. Listen, the point is that, you know, the power is on the Kings' side. The banner is on the Kings' side. And we don't like to talk about uncomfortable things in the show, but this is probably the last hurrah for the Getzlaff Perry duo, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, I don't want to talk about that. Come on.
I'm sorry.
Hey, you know what I can never understand? Yeah. How come Bobby Ryan's always the guy getting traded? Bobby Ryan's the guy who agreed to sign a long-term contract to stay in Anaheim. Meanwhile, Perry and Getzlaff can totally walk on July 1st. Not a peep ever about a trade with these two guys.
Well, you can't trade the Hart Trophy winner. You know, he's the best player on the team, really. And then Getzlaff, you know, his stock's fallen a lot over the past, you know, I would say since the Olympics. He hasn't really done much at all.
Are you at all worried that Bobby Ryan might love playing with Andrei Kopitar so much that he'll request a trade to the Kings?
I am. He talked about it a lot in the interviews, some Swedish interviews that he did when he arrived. He was like, oh, yeah, we're best buddies with Kopitar. And, yeah, he just called me up and said, come over, and I jumped on a plane. So it's pretty nerve-wracking.
Here are the Kings offering of a chance potentially to play on Kopitar's wing. And what are the Ducks doing? Trying to make him into a center. Oh,
yeah,
why he'd want to play in L.A.? Exactly. All right, listen, it's Game Show Friday. The game show we're playing today is in honor of the completely pointless and failed mediation between the National Hockey League and the National Hockey League Players Association. Mediation can sometimes lead to arbitration. In this case, it did not. So we are theming today's Game Show Friday with you, Chris, to arbitration and mediation, a meditation, if you will, on mediation and arbitration.
Wow, that's a lot of shuns.
All right, I'm a little nervous.
I've been, by the way, much like Gary Bettman, I've been recused from Game Show Friday now. I'm only allowed one question because of how I've behaved in the past.
Merrick's in the penalty box. Quizmaster Merrick, I believe, was a little too harsh and probing with his questions.
Oh.
Exactly. Quizmaster Wyszynski, on the other hand, challenging but fair, I think is what I would prefer. Like kind of a good cop, bad cop thing. A Bond cop, good bad cop. What's the name of this movie again? Was it Bond Cop?
Oh, is it Bond Cop, Bad Cop?
Cop, Bad Cop, if you will. If
Bond
you
just means good in French.
No. Oh, does it really?
Yeah, so, Bond Cop.
So I sit on my couch depressed eating good goods all night, is what you're trying to say.
Yum, yum.
Okay.
Bienvenue à la Québec.
Welcome in. Here is our game show for today. Are you ready, Chris?
I am.
All right. Gird your loins. Question, and by the way, you got to get 6 out of 10 correct because, as you know, we demand a D from our listeners. It's the least you could do, provide us with a D.
Like Brian Burke, right?
Brian Burke, a D plus.
A D plus? Ha, 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 ha.
Which Southeast Division team walked away from a one-year contract worth $2.4 million in arbitration, paving the way for this player, for Clark MacArthur, to join the Toronto Maple Leafs? Which Southeast Division team walked away from Clark MacArthur?
Would that be the Tampa Bay Lightning?
It's kind of a trick. It's actually the Atlanta Thrashers.
Wow.
Atlanta Thrashers walking away from Clark MacArthur. And then because of that, they relocated because of the MacArthur snafu. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
Directly related.
Yeah.
Question number two.
That's why Clark MacArthur is so loved in Winnipeg.
Question number two. In 2010, former Thrasher Ilya Kovalchuk and the New Jersey Devils lost an arbitration case against the NHL, rejecting his contract.
Ooh.
How many years was the original contract Kovalchuk signed for that the arbitrator spiked?
Within 2 years.
The original contract
break
was
here.
17 years.
Whoa. 17 years Ooh. Is correct. Oh, how dare you underestimate our
Sorry.
Guest, sir. How dare you?
I know.
Question number three. On the eve of the 1991-92 season, the New Jersey Devils were handed defenseman Scott Stevens as compensation for the St. Louis Blues signing Brendan Shanahan as a free agent. Name one of the two all-star players the Blues offered up as their compensation to the arbitrator but were denied. So we want one of the two players the Blues were offering while the Devils ask for Scott Stevens.
Okay. I want to say one of them was a goalie.
30 seconds. Uh-huh. And a goalie is?
And was it Curtis Joseph?
Correctamundo. Cujo and Rod Brind'Amour were the two players, along with some other draft pick compensation and stuff. So, okay, you're 2 out of 3 so far, Game Show Friday. Meditation on Arbitration and Mediation Edition. The question four. After this goalie was given a $2.75 billion arbitration award, the Chicago Blackhawks walked away and allowed him to sign with the San Jose Sharks.
Anthony Amy.
Correctamundo. Question five. Layups. In 2012, this former.
2 foot putts.
This is a tougher one, right?
All right, we'll see.
You got the question. It's a tougher one.
I'm ready.
In 2012, this former Vancouver Canuck won an NHL grievance arbitration against his former team for $6.2 million. Former Canuck won a NHL grievance arbitration against his former team for $6.2 million. I'll give you a hint. Canucks fans not exactly fond of this player.
May or may not have worn number 11. Is now very concerned about concussions, strangely enough, considering how he played.
Mark Messier is correct. Look at you. Merrick, you have no right to criticize my questions if you're going to help them along. You used to wear number 11, for Christ's sake.
Wow.
All right. Question number six.
Used to wear a Winwell helmet. Played with the Cincinnati Stingers of the WHA. Has a father named Doug.
Had a little black boy not named Emmanuel Lewis on his lap in the locker room.
Well, he wore a towel sipping on a Molson Export.
And you could see his... Anyways. In 2002, the Canucks went to arbitration with this centerman and listened as the team's representative claimed this centerman was a mouse riding on the backs of elephants, having picked up a slew of points skating with Marcus Naslin and Todd Bertuzzi. Which center are we talking about, former Canuck?
I'm going to go with...
Four,
three, two, one.
Anson Carter?
No!
The centerman we were looking for was Brendan Morrison, a mouse riding on the backs of elephants. Former Duck. Former Devil. Former Devil as well. BMO was his nickname in Jersey. In 1997, Chris Gratton was signed to a 5-year deal by the Philadelphia Flyers as a restricted free agent. But the Tampa Bay Lightning then tried to trade him to which Western Conference team for Ethan Morrow, Steve Dubinsky, and Keith Carney? So, signs with the Flyers, Lightning then try to trade him. Arbitrator says, no dice, trade can't happen. Which Western Conference team was that trade to, and the players coming back would have been Ethan Morrow, Steve Dubinsky, and Keith Carney?
Ooh.
Five. Four. Three. A two. One.
Pick one.
I would go with Edmonton.
The correct Ethan Morrow got you, didn't it? Correct answer was the Chicago Blackhawks. Chicago Blackhawks is the correct answer. All right, so now you've hit a little bit of a skid, a little 2-game losing streak here, but we know you're going to pick it up with this one because this one is fairly, I'd say, manageable. New York Islanders general manager Mike Milbury infamously made the Swedish goaltender cry during a blistering arbitration case rant. Islanders goalie Mike Milbury made him cry. Swede.
Tommy Salo.
Correct, Amundo. So that is number five. Now things get interesting. Very interesting. You need one more to win. Got two more questions left, Merrick.
I got a bonus one, too. I think he can do it. He's a smart guy. He's not like a smart guy.
All right. Last week, Guy Cerrata of the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service was pulled off the NHL and NHLPA mediation because his Twitter feed was allegedly hacked. Lovely comedian did Cerrata frequently tweet, including one in which he referred to her as a terrorist whore?
I think that was Sarah Silverman, right?
Correct.
Oh, it was.
You pulled that one out. That's the mediation portion of the game show. Now we will go back to the arbitration for question 10. You already got the prize. Now it's just gravy.
Hey.
Question 10 and then also Merrick's bonus question. Question 10.
Now it's just about showing off.
In perhaps the most famous arbitration compensation case in NHL history, Eric Lindros was traded to the Flyers from the Quebec Nordique, rather than Quebec completing a trade with the New York Rangers. The Rangers offer, sir, name three of the four players the Rangers offered for Lindros back in 1991.
Oh,
it's cool.
Three of the four. I don't even know any of them.
Well, go ahead and throw out some names of Rangers. I'll give you a hint. Brad Park, not in the trade.
Okay.
Vic Hatfield, not in the trade.
It was 1991.
Bun Cook, not in the trade.
Was it 91 or 92, right. Merrick? Was it
Ed
91
Jockerman.
Or 92, the
Lindros
trade? 91, that's what I thought.
I think it was 91.
That right, doesn't, so I assume shit. Well, who were the players in the trade?
Oh, what about 92? Because he would have gone back in the – no, it was 90 draft, so he would have gone back into it for 92, and that's when the deal had to be made.
Why are we even having this you're stalling.
Right, and the players.
He's stalling.
All right.
He's Donald Fear. He's Donald
must have
Fear.
Been big players. Must have been some big players, so I'm going to go with, like, Brian Leach, Mike Richter.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I'll just throw in former Duck, Todd Marchand.
Dude. This is going to blow your mind, but none of those players were in the trade.
Whoa!
Doug Waite, Tony Amonte, Alexei Kovalev, John Van Beesbrook, 3 first-round draft picks and $12 million. Wow. Can you imagine a team anteing up that package for a player?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Pretty great.
All right, what was your bonus question, Merrick?
Quebec off. Oh, my question actually riffs on that. During that arbitration process, who was the arbitrator? And he's done tons of high-profile NHL arbitration cases to the point where I think he's the only NHL arbitrator that I can name.
Yeah, no, I don't have that one. I do remember hearing something about an NHL arbitrator being somehow related to Todd Bertuzzi. Is that something? Does that ring a bell?
Larry Bertuzzi is the cat's name. Look at you. See, I told you, man. Chris is a smart dude. Chris kind of got the bonus there. Helped him out a little bit. But I got to play nice guy Eddie because I've been a jerk on Game Show Friday for a couple
of
weeks now.
You have been a real big jerk on Game Show Friday. There's no question about that.
You know what's interesting about that Lindros, by the way, that whole scenario with Philadelphia and the New York Rangers? You know what that was the beginning of in the NHL? It was after that botched trade that the NHL instituted the trade call. That's why whenever on trade deadline, always waiting for the trade call to go through. It was because of that. And after that moment, the NHL said, here's how we're going to do trades. There's a number you're going to call. Each general manager has to call up, say the trade, player for player, pick for pick, cash for cash. And then if each general manager said the exact same thing, then the trade was considered a good trade and the trade would go through. But you know what used to happen, Wish? It's a great story. When they first came up with the number, like you think the players, only the ones that are drunk and get goofy, NHL general managers would get drunk, call the number, and do drunk Ron Caron impressions with insane trades by the St. Louis Blues. Oh, the NHL funny. Finally had to shut that down.
That's funny.
Yep.
All right, Chris. Hey, Chris, you still there?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, aces. Merrick, tell him what he wins.
I don't know what he wins. Josh, you want to hop on the line and tell him what he wins? Josh is our producer, Josh Goldsmith.
He wins a mystery prize from Sportsnet to be determined, but we are working on it. We'll get you some.
What was it? I couldn't hear that.
The mystery prize, which means we don't have one right now, but we're taking your name and number, and we're going to get something out to you for courtesy of Sportsnet.
Okay, as long as it's not the King's book.
No, it will not. We will not send the King's book to an Anaheim Ducks fan. That's a good one, though. That is a pretty good one. You know what? Well, whatever we do, you know what I should... Here's what I'm going to do for you, bud. Because I work a lot with Brad May, who was on your 2007 Stanley Cup champion teams. Whatever we end up sending out to you, I'll get Mady to autograph it. How about that?
That sounds awesome.
It's going to be a photograph of Dustin Penner holding up the cup as a king. Is that okay?
No, it'll be Brad May scoring on Andy Moog in the Adams Division playoffs, sweeping the Boston Bruins game 4.
It'll be a Photoshop photograph of Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff in Leafs jerseys. Is that okay?
Oh.
Yeah, it's just me.
It is just
all right,
me.
Man. Just hey, me. Listen, thank you for supporting the podcast. Thank you for playing along today. You did quite well in Game Show Friday.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, bud.
The lovely Chris in the OC.
Big Ducks fan.
Josh was amazed that we were able to have a contestant on Game Show Friday, not from Washington, D.C., by the way.
I'm convinced that only people from Washington and Karen Douglas listen to the show. And Nikki Schatz. I think Nikki's in Pittsburgh.
Got a lot.
And Rhiannon,
lot of
no, Rhiannon, Rhiannon's in Philadelphia.
No, we got it's some. Becoming a children's show now. I see.
Where's Vellucci? Mike, where do you listen from? Where's Vellucci?
Vellucci's from Jersey, don't you think?
Is he Jersey?
Devils fan. Sure.
Yeah, probably.
P. Joseph Miller writes into the question of the day, hey guys, I'm a huge Wings fan and love crossing the Ambassador to go to games, but the one thing that drives me nuts about the Joe is some of the fans. Not all the fans, but quite a few are huge douchebags. Went to a game with a buddy who was going for the away team, Nashville. We quietly watched, and when the Preds scored, he stayed seated and clapped. After a Wings goal, an older fan turned around, gave him the finger, and told him to F off. After a second goal, the fan behind my friend grabbed him by the hood and screamed in his ear a number of profanities. Incidents like this happened all game. I'm down for some light chirping, but this wasn't fun for anyone. Preds ended up winning, which I was secretly happy about, and on the way back through the arena, he was punched in the stomach by a random Wings fan and told to go back south.
Guys,
Windsor is south of Detroit, but I think the guy meant Nashville. Wasn't the only bad experience I've had at the Joe either, if only the fans were like the players in Detroit and showed a little class. That was from Joe Miller. Hey, but, you know, moral of the story, don't wear your Predator shit to a Wings game. Just don't.
Oh, he's asking for it. Scott T. submits, being a Toronto fan, love the goalie races. Oh, you know what? My buddy Mike Majeka, who's now teaching hockey in Israel, the Israeli camp that I taught at a couple of years ago, he was one of those goalie. You ever seen the goalie race at the ACC?
Yeah. It's awesome.
It's like rollerball. Honestly, it's like my buddy Mike was, what was his name? Handsome Johnny, the guy with the long hair. There he is. Plug for my buddy Mike Majeka.
By the way, Joe Miller wants to know if you're coming down to Windsor for the NHLPA charity game, is the question for you.
I don't know if I am or not. I only have my, we're like week to week on our schedules at Sportsnet because everything's contingent on the NHL lockout. I only know my schedule, a week out, so I don't know yet. I would like to. I'd like to go see Windsor Spitfire game. Doing the Windsor Spitfire game tonight, by the way. Windsor Kitchener. Hey, guess who's working on our set tonight? Greg Wyszynski. It's myself, Nick Kyprios, Damian Cox,
and
making his debut as an analyst on our Windsor Kitchener game this evening, PK Subban.
Wow.
Montreal Canadiens defenseman, former Belleville Bull, gold medal winner of the World Junior Tournament a few years ago in Ottawa.
Can't wait until there's a call on the Sportsnet switchboard from the Boston area and a guy who sounds suspiciously like Brad Marchand saying, "This guy's terrible. Get him off the air. I think he just cursed."
Doesn't know what he's talking about, man. Get him off the freaking air. I was hoping we'd do a Belleville Bulls game. We could ask him to criticize his brother Malcolm.
Yeah. That'd be awesome, actually. He wouldn't.
Yeah,
that'd
be
awesome.
So much fun. Hey, look at that goalie getting lit up.
Stephen Harrison writes in, favorite part is shouting of True North at the MTS Center. I'm dying to go to Winnipeg for a game. And love the appreciation to the company that brought hockey back. This is from Colby Day. This is a very interesting one. I hate the white towel waving. It is just too submissive a gesture to be taken seriously. Don't wave the white towel.
But that's historical. That's Roger Nielsen in the conference finals, 1982, Vancouver,
yeah,
Chicago.
But it's also a sign of surrender.
A sign of surrender?
Yeah, isn't it?
Well, it was a sign of surrender by Roger Nielsen. That's what it was. He was saying, I give up, refs. You guys are killing us.
It's from Heather Y. Heather Y writes in, I hate ice girls. Heather, by the way, is a wicked big Bruins fan. I hate ice girls that don't clean the ice. It's stupid. I love a good hockey fight montage. Now...
That's freaking awesome. Clean the ice, lady.
I've seen the ice girl videos from our friends at the Dallas Stars and other teams. They get shovel training. It is intensive shovel training.
They get shovel training?
Yeah.
I found it quite odd when the Dallas Stars organization feigned outrage over Sean Avery's comments when he was a Dallas Star about Alicia Cuthbert, but had no problem trotting out the ice girls at every stoppage. Was I the only one that found that a little bit more than Raise your eyebrow.
Double standard, huh?
You think? You think? Come on, that, dude. That, you know it's true.
That you miss Sean Avery, by the way?
I do. I do miss Sean Avery.
I do too.
You know me. It's heroes and villains. NHL needs them.
Yep.
I totally miss Sean Avery. He's the one guy that I hope, you know, who's done with the game now. I hope he's that. He's a guy, because normally I'm like, oh, okay, here comes a comeback. I get it. Oh, Peter Forsberg again. I hope that Sean Avery tries to make a comeback. I hope he has that, man, I missed the game moment and tries for a comeback.
Oh, man, he would have
comes back.
There was
comes,
a moment.
And comes right back, and he's just a prick all over again.
There was a moment in time where he would have been the perfect player for the New York Islanders.
Oh, as far as the heel turn?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And playing against the Rangers, perfect. Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, that is the show for today, and that is the show for the week. Another incredible week on the Merrick vs. Wyszynski podcast, in which we continue to somehow miraculously come up with content when there's dick all going on in hockey.
We talked about the puck on a string around the neck this week. That was good stuff. Next week, I'll tell you the story about how I buried Harold Ballard.
I haven't heard anybody, nobody has written in to say, yes, that the puck on the string around the neck thing happened in my school.
I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed, by the way. Because that can't just be an Ontario phenomenon or a PEI phenomenon. I just can't believe that you never got the puck hog, puck around the neck, had to wear it to school.
What do you got coming up this weekend, sir, besides tonight?
What do I have? I have an interesting weekend coming up. I've got the game tonight, Kitchener and Windsor, and then Bobby Holik is in town, so I'm going to take him to junior hockey games. Bobby wants to see junior hockey live, so I'm taking him to some junior hockey games this weekend. So far, for sure, we're going to the Oshawa-Sarnia game on Sunday.
Respectfully request that you wear a wire.
I can do that. I can just leave like a tape recorder in the car as we drive down the 401 to the rink in Oshawa on Sunday.
Going to my buddy Jamie's 30th birthday on Saturday, so that'll be a good time.
Nice.
And I have a Blu-ray I'm watching tonight, taking care of the little kid tonight. Taking care of little Vivian tonight. So I'm watching a Blu-ray.
What are you watching?
I'm gonna be
tonight?
Watching The Candidate. Is it called The Candidate? Whatever the hell that election movie was with Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis.
The Campaign,
I think?
Blu-ray
tonight. The campaign? Yeah, The Candidate's the old Redford movie. Yeah, The Campaign is what I'm going to watch tonight. So I'll give you a full report as to whether or not it's actually worth your time.
Hmm.
Saw Spider-Man earlier this week, by the way. I didn't talk about that on the podcast, I don't think. Yeah, it was all right. I mean, it was like if I had never seen a Sam Raimi Spider-Man, I think I would have liked a lot better. Good leads. Garfield and Emma Stone, off the charts chemistry. But essentially the same villain plot as the first X-Men film, and not a good one at that. But it made me hopeful for the next film. And by that I mean, if these guys don't give me... There's two things I want in life, Merrick.
What's that?
A superhero movie. I want Superman to either punch a giant robot or a giant alien that's attacking Metropolis. Like, punch it and send it into effing space.
Whoa,
and I want a Spider-Man movie where he fights the Sinister Six. I want Rhino and Electro and all those
cats. Takes them all on at the same time?
Takes them 6-on-1, Spidey versus the Sinister Six. That's what I want.
Okay, listen, you know how much of an entertainment outsider I am. Would you recommend that, you know, considering I watch, you know, only a handful of movies every year, should I have this on my agenda this year? The Spider-Man movie.
The one that just came out?
Yeah.
No. Did you see any of the Raimi Spider-Mans? They're like the three that came out in the last...
The first one. The first one.
Go see the second. Watch the second Spider-Man instead of watching this new Spider-Man. It's still one of the best superhero movies of all time. But if you want a wild card, quite fond of the X-Men First Class movie that came out a couple years back. Takes place in the 1960s, a period piece. It's very good.
Really, eh?
Yep.
I saw the first X-Men and I loved it.
X-Men First Class is real solid. It's got your James McAvoy as Professor X and Michael Fassbender's penis as Magneto.
What?
Michael Fassbender is an actor, and he's known to he's known to pack him in at the theater, if you will.
Piece of driftwood.
Yes.
Look who just washed
ashore.
Of
the white, a star of the widescreen, as it were. All right. Once again.
Where'd your wristwatch go?
What? What did happen?
Wrong wrist. That penis has an elbow. Jesus.
He's got a tattoo on his penis that sometimes reads UA and sometimes reads United States of America. It's very strange.
Is that right?
No, it's not right at all.
It's the joke.
What?
The welcome to Jamaica. That's the welcome to Jamaica. Have
yes,
a nice
the welcome
day
to Jamaica joke. But I changed it around.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. That's all right. Good. That's good.
Right,
and then Cleopatra said, not now, I'm on my pyramid. We're just going to say punchlines all show along. No, you shower and I'll show her.
I said a tiny pianist. Anyway.
12-inch pianist.
12-inch pianist. God, why do I know like half the punchline. Like Johnny half the punchline.
I told you my punchline that I don't have a joke for. I just said it. And then Cleopatra said, not now, I'm on my pyramid. Just need a joke to
all
go
right,
with
so
it.
All right, so there's your homework assignment, Merrick versus Drinking listeners. Craft a joke around Merrick's punchline, which is, again, what's your punchline?
Oh, and then Cleopatra said, not now, I'm on my pyramid.
Okay. There you go. There's your homework assignment. Craft a joke around that punchline. PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com. Send it to us, and we'll choose the winning joke and give you a mystery prize. So something to shoot for.
Yeah. Bread
all right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye. Thank you.